צורים, חייבס הלבבס, שער הביטוחן, פרק דלת, בעזרת השם. In the part that starts of a perush achelik hashishi, but we're not really going to be reading in order now. Let's again restate where we're holding in our discussion here. So the chayvus halavus here is discussing bitachon in olam haba. And what he wants to address here is, why does the Torah not delineate or describe, elaborate on the schar of olam haba the same way it describes the punishments? Sorry, put it a little differently. Why doesn't the Torah delineate the schar for mitzvahs the same way it delineates the averus for punishments? There's really two parts to the question. Punishments is a very clear listing system, if we'll put it that way, of this avera gets this punishment, that one gets that punishment. With mitzvahs, it's not like that. The way he put it was, we're promised an overall reward for overall keeping the Torah. We're not told this gets you this, that gets you that, with respect to most mitzvahs. And number two, why wasn't Olam Haba described a bit more? So we discussed, so the Chavis HaVavis gives a number of answers. I'm not going to go through all of them. Some of them are more philosophical. But we're going to touch on a few of them. We spent a lot of time on one of them last week. And now we'll touch on some other ones. So it starts from mayhem. Now, don't follow too much inside because we're going to be really talking mainly outside. So the first reason that he gives, and we're not going to be necessarily going in order here, but the first reason that he gives, and we will read this part inside, it's mayhem. after Aval Perush Achelik HaShishi. I'll read it slowly. If you don't find it, don't worry. You want me to locate it in an English one?
Yeah.
Okay. Here. Oops.
Okay, at the bottom of 434.
Yeah, the bottom of 434 in English, but we'll give me kind of touching on things. So number one, why doesn't the Torah describe Olam Haba? Mehem kitzuras ha-nefesh bil'ade ha-guf ene yidua etzleinu. Olam Haba, we exist as a neshama. And right now, all we know is the body. Not because that's who we really are, but just because that's all we're aware of right now. It's a short little period of time when you are largely turned off. And we think that we are mainly body. You look in the mirror, you think, okay, begins and ends with that. You're really a neshama. You've existed for thousands of years as a neshama. You're going to exist for millions of years as a neshama. And there's a short little period in the life of the neshama that it actually goes through a body. It's a short but critical period in the neshama's life. But for Hashem to describe Olam Haba is about the neshama. The body has no idea, is not in touch with the neshama and its experiences right now. And therefore, there isn't really a way to describe it to us. And therefore, it is an issue, there's something of an issue of faith here of realizing that Hashem is telling you, I know what your neshama is. You don't. For me to try to explain to you the experiences of the neshama will go completely over your head. So how about if you just trust me when I tell you that it's going to be better than anything you've ever experienced? It's kind of like you tell a little kid, I'm going to go on this dream vacation for a month, and the kid would rather just have a bag of potato chips. And you don't have the time to start describing exactly all the things you're going to be doing and why they're fun, etc. And you're basically telling the kid, listen, I'm the one who introduced you to a bag of potato chips, right? You never knew what a bag of potato chips was before I bought you one, right? So I'm the one who introduced you to the lollipop. So you know that I have a handle on good times. So let me tell you, you're not going to want to trade this in for a bag of potato chips. So that's basically what we're being told here. I think we've said this mashal a number of times. I'm going to say it again. That when we hear that, then we actually spoke about this a bit last week, appreciating that the main schar of Olam Haba is spiritual. And that as bodies, we can't really connect to that. We have very faint tastes of spirituality in this world. Even though in this world also, we can already get a taste, sufficient enough of a taste to understand that it's actually worth working for. But to say that that is the ultimate bliss, it's not something that the body appreciates. So that's why, you remember, as kids or whatever stage in life, when you're told that the schar of Olam Haba is mainly spiritual and it's kind of like deflating. Like if so, you know, maybe I would rather just get it in Olam Hazeh. So we have to appreciate that it's true because we're talking in terms of, I'll get to it in a moment. We're talking in bodily terms. The body is really very limited. It's mamish like the kid who can't imagine much more than a bag of potato chips right now because his experiences are limited. And that's what we are. We might be selling ourselves short by not appreciating what the significance of the neshama is. And we'll be nether elaborate on that a bit. But first, I want to take the question. What were you going to ask?
That I remember learning that the body goes along with the neshama, and so that it gets rewarded. When does the body get rewarded? Where is that in this world?
So the body, Olam Haba is just the neshama. Tchiyas HaMesim, you're probably referring to the Ramchal in Derech Hashem, where he talks about how in Tchiyas HaMesim, the body is rejoined with the neshama in a completely new state, and that's really the ultimate stage of reward, where they're both getting it together. Even then, it's not in the body's current capacity. The body is brought to levels that it's able to experience things that it can't experience right now in its current state. So let's appreciate that anything you've enjoyed as a body, as a body, you think that that's all there is. You think of the best foods you've ever eaten or whatever other physical, bodily, material experiences you've had, different types of pleasure, different types of gratification, and you think, okay, the most of that. But we've said this, Marshall, let's repeat it again, even if I'm boring you, because it's good. Part of the purpose of saying these mishalim and bringing across these points is not for the purpose of making the point, but for the purpose of making a point of reviewing them at least every 2 months. So that's why we will unapologetically be repetitious. Think of it as follows. If you think of a person who is put under general anesthesia, whole body is put under general anesthesia except for the little toe, except for the pinky toe. Right now, this person is completely unaware of his body. What does he feel? He feels his little toe. Now, let's imagine the little toe kind of has a mind of its own, right? But now, as far as this person is concerned, existence is the existence of a little toe. That's all you think, that's all there is. So, if you want to talk in terms of pain, pain is being stepped on. There isn't really much else. There's not much you can threaten the little toe with. Threatened with them. Being stepped on, stepping on a sharp piece of Lego, I don't know, whatever, something like that, right? That's pain. And pleasure, what are you going to offer a little toe? A massage, a hot bath, I don't know, a spa, chmesvos. But that's basically it, right? That's the extent of it. So you tell this little toe, listen, you are under general anesthesia. You should know that what's really at where you wake up, that's really where it's at. When you're going to wake up, then you will really be in position to start enjoying. Nebuch, all you have is your hot bath and your massage. And the toe is like, are you kidding? No, the massage is, that's life, right? That's the epitome of life. What could be better than a massage 24/7, right? So, but you say, no, come on, you're missing out on so many good things. There's so much more out there. There's food. Okay, tell me about food. Well, there's a thing called taste buds. What does a taste bud mean? Well, it's like you get a certain sensation on your tongue when you eat something. Huh? Right? What's a tongue? You're right. And what happens? Well, you stick it into the tongue. So the toe is trying to figure out, like you stick it in and what? And sensations. I don't know. Like when you touch a piece of meat to a little toe, it feels nothing. It just feels greasy. So what are we talking about? Just, you know, give me my massage and I'm very happy with that. I don't need to come out of the anesthesia. I'm happy to just, if you give me all the massages I want, I say, no, you're selling yourself short. You're selling yourself short. Chaval, it's a shame. Don't do that. So this is basically what the message does. We are so much more than the body. The body has very limited capacity with all the pleasure we've experienced. As much as we may think that we are mavens in enjoying Olam Hazeh, the body has very limited capacity for pleasure. There's very little that the body can enjoy. Hashem gave it a little bit of a taste because the way the Mesiyas Yisharim puts it, the way the Ramchal puts it is, Olam Hazeh wasn't really meant for enjoying. Olam Habo was built for giving you pleasure. Olam Hazeh was not. Just what? It was built for a very specific function. Part of the function of Olam Hazeh necessitates a little bit of pleasure. So Hashem gave you a very diluted, faint kind of pleasure. A little bit of taste, a little bit of other things, a little bit of this, but realize that all that is mamish like the toes massage. And Hashem is telling you, I'm the one who created you. I'm the one who created pleasure. I'm the one who limited your capacity. Trust me that this is mamish, not it. This is not your pleasure capacity. There's so much more. I can't relate to it. Spiritual pleasure doesn't talk to me. Of course it doesn't talk to you. How would it? You currently are detached from the experience of a neshama. But believe me, you're not going to want to give up on this. We have Bilam HaRasha who brought this across to us. We mentioned last week that one of the most explicit references to Olam Haba is when Bilam is getting his nevuah, when he's being shown visions of our future, the things that we never experienced. But Bilam is being shown a very clear vision. He's actually being put in touch with the experience of where the Jew goes after 120. And he looks at that longingly, and he just says from the bottom of his heart, if only I could have that, what would I give to have that? There's actually an answer to that. You just have to give up on a few things that I can't do. Or probably more likely his answer would have been, I will, but just not yet. I can do it tomorrow. But just when he was actually having that vision and seeing it, he was just yearning for it. We have to look at him chalishing and say that, you know what, that's actually what's in store for us. So therefore, the Chavis HaMavis is telling us, Hashem did not describe to us this Kar of Olam Haba, because you can't connect, you can't get to this the experience of a neshama. So Hashem is basically just coming and telling us, it's there. Trust me. You think you know about pleasure? I created all those pleasures. I created your ability to connect with them. I created your capacity for those pleasures. And this is something very faint and minute. Don't sell yourself short. Okay. So that's the Chavis HaLevavos' answer number one as to why the Torah does not describe the true Sekhar. Okay. So in answer number two, you might call that like a little more technical. Mehem shegmula olam haba ve'onshay. Another reason is that the reward of olam haba and the punishment of the after death, this was one of those things that was handed down orally. It was a standing tradition since the time of Adam Arishayim. Went through the Avos, through the Nevi'im. So everybody knew about it. The Chachamim figured it out philosophically. And yeah, it gets very short, very brief, almost like allusion mentioned in the Torah, as is the case with many areas of Torah. Because anyways, the primary form of transmitting Torah is meant to be orally. Question?
Yeah, but on mitzvahs and stuff, I mean, there's back dates and more. What oral tradition is there about the world to come, about punishment, about reward? I don't remember hearing anything. Is there a whole tradition?
So the truth is that there is.
Oh.
In the Gemara, like you're saying, and this actually rounds out the point of the Chavis HaLevavos. We see that the agenda of Teresh Abitzav was not to provide all the information. This is something that's very, very important to know. This is actually fundamental to life as a Jew, to Hashkafa as a Jew. Teresh Abitzav is not our source of information. It's a shorthand record of the basics. Of the basics. Meaning, for example, do we know anything about Shmiras Shabbos for Teresh Abitzav except that there's such a thing? Teresh says you're not allowed to do malach on Shabbos. It says don't burn fire, right? And you have to keep Shabbos, sanctify Shabbos. But from there to how Shabbos is actually meant to be kept, we need so much elaboration. And the Chazal tell us that it's alluded in these very faint allusions in the Torah. The Torah says keep Shabbos right after it describes building the Mishkan to allude to you that keeping Shabbos means not doing all the things that were done in the Mishkan. What are they? Like you said, we have to have tractates and tractates elaborating on them. And that's how it is with many, many of the mitzvahs, tefillin. Anybody can get a picture of what tefillin is by looking in the Torah? You have to have toitofos between your eyes. What are toitofos? What do they look like? What color are they? Etc., etc. No idea. Bris. The Torah says you have to remove the arla. What's the arla? Arla is the foreskin. Well, we all know what it is. How do we know what it is? The Torah doesn't describe. Maybe it's the extra skin at the edge of the elbow. Maybe it's the earlobe. Foreskin means the added on skin. How do we know? With all the machlokes in the Gemara, there's no machlokes about that. There's no machlokes about that. Why? Because these were things that were given over very clearly through oral tradition. Plenty of other examples. What's an esrog? What are hadasim? Aravos are clear. Lulav is clear. Enough. Hadasim and esrog, very unclear. There's no machlokes about it in the Gemara. We know exactly what it is. The Torah deliberately set it up that way. Why did the Torah deliberately set it up that way? Because the Torah wants us to realize the need for instruction, the need for receiving things through our Rebbe. Question? No, okay. The need for receiving things through our Rebbe, the realization that we can't figure it out on our own, and we need the live tradition, those who can actually show us both through their teachings and through personal example what Hashem's Torah is about. This is a fundamental part of Torah. And that's why Davka, where Rav Hirsch puts it, is Torah Shebiksav is like a person who went to a major medical conference, who was there for a week, heard lectures from all the top doctors and all the different parts of the body, and he had a notebook with him, and he took shorthand notes. He took shorthand notes. So somebody else comes and says, I can get the best of both worlds. I didn't have to pay to attend the conference. I didn't have to take out a week and sit through lectures for hours and hours. I'm going to take this guy's notes. This guy has 5 pages of shorthand notes. Why do I have to be a loser and be there for a week? And the answer is you're not going to get you anywhere. The notes are only worth something to the person who was at the conference. And when he now opens up the notebook, right. And it reminds him of everything that was said. That's how Rav Hirsch says is the relationship between Teresh Abitzav and Teresh Baal Peh. And therefore, one of the big examples of that is Olam Haba. The Torah makes a few faint references to it throughout the Torah, as we discussed. It's not true to say that it doesn't appear anywhere in the Torah. There are numerous references and allusions to Olam Haba throughout Tanakh. But in terms of the description, that was left for oral tradition. Now, as to the question of where do we have it, we do. Throughout Shas, there's plenty of discussion about Olam Haba. There's a lot of discussion about Olam Haba, perhaps even more so in the Zohar. Moving around through Chazal's literature, there's a lot of discussion about Olam Haba. Just what? It's going to come back to the first point of the Chovos HaLevavos, that at the end of the day, it's always going to fall short because you're trying to describe experiences of the neshama. And there's just so much the neshama can be told. The body can be told about the neshama's experience. But in terms of extensive discussion of Olam Haba, yes, there is. There's extensive discussion throughout Chazal, throughout the Gemara. Okay. Again, I'm not going to move through all the different philosophical explanations. Another reason which is very important to realize, is, I'm skipping, and then I'm going to back up to another one. I want to make sure we get this one out. It wasn't really possible to delineate the schar for the mitzvahs because of the fact that no two mitzvahs are created equal. When I say no two mitzvahs are created equal, I don't mean Shabbos versus tefillin. I mean tefillin versus tefillin. I mean lighting Shabbos candles versus lighting Shabbos candles. Two women might do the same mitzvah, but they're worlds apart. You might do the very same mitzvah two different times, and they're worlds apart from each other. Because as we've, I think we actually discussed this here a couple of weeks ago, the weight behind the mitzvah is not so much in the act itself as much as in all of the feeling, the mind, the heart, the dedication, the sacrifice that went into the mitzvah. And that there's a million degrees. There's no way to come and say, eating kosher earns you this char, eating matzah earns you this char, because it mainly depends on what was behind the action. Now let's just clarify that. Doing the action itself, just because you wanted to do the mitzvah, you know you're supposed to, and you want to do the mitzvah, is already very, very major. It's kind of like, you get into a taxi, so it goes, by the minute, the meter is moving by the minute. But when you first get in, it doesn't start from zero. Right? There's the beginning stroke is, whatever it is, and then from there it goes up. So you have to appreciate the very act of the mitzvah, taking away, before we start talking about deeper intent, before we start talking about feeling. You know that you're supposed to do the mitzvah and you did it, you're already talking in the, just for our purposes, you're already talking in the millions. It's not like there's a cheap mitzvah, so to speak, because you didn't do it. Every mitzvah is in the millions. Just now, once you start enhancing it with the added feeling, the added mind, the added dedication, channeling gratitude into it, channeling love into it, sacrifice, etc., the efforts to enhance it more, there it just gets exponential in terms of what you can add to the mitzvah. Just to say this in a very general way, in a very basic way. A person who does a mitzvah completely by mistake, completely inadvertently, it's not called being mekayem the mitzvah. Let's say a person, did a mitzvah by mistake, okay? You weren't careful, you were trying to light a cigarette, and by accident you lit Shabbos candles. Okay? So there's no schar for that. Because there's the basic rule that mitzvah tzrichas kavana. Mitzvah tzrichas kavana means a mitzvah requires intent. But what does that intent mean? That intent means something very, very basic and simple. I know I have to do this and I'm doing it. That's all.
It's not I don't have to do it. What if you just do it?
Do you know it's a mitzvah?
You're a non-firm Jew. You're out there. You are honoring your parents or your... giving tzedakah. It doesn't count as nothing if you don't know that it's a mitzvah.
This is a tough question. Apparently, there's a level of schar for following the dictates of your conscience. But that can't be compared at all to the level of schar that a person gets for doing it as a mitzvah. Anytime a person overcomes their instincts and adheres to the higher call, apparently, there's a level of schar for that also. And that is a level of schar that any human being can get. Any human being can get. But when we're talking about the superlative levels of schar that Hashem is treating his children to, we're talking about the things that are done in the context of a relationship with him.
Okay, so if it's in a dvar that you don't know it's in a vera, is it also not counted so much then?
Yeah.
The same sort of thing.
Yeah.
You didn't know.
That's right. That's what we call shaygig. Now, there's a certain level of accountability for not knowing, but it's definitely nowhere near doing an avera that you knew was wrong. So,
that a person who's doing a mitzvah just because he's getting a star is not the same as doing something because of the right thing to do.
Oh, so you're asking, what if a person is doing a mitzvah just because they want the schar? So here we have to say that this is what I mean when we say, here we're already talking about billions versus trillions. We have to realize that. A person who's doing a mitzvah because he knows it's going to get him schar is going to get a men's schar for that. Just, there are higher levels. But the higher levels should not allow us, that's always the tricky part. We hear descriptions of the greater levels, so it makes us think, well, then the lower levels are nothing. But they're not. And here, this is really the point that I'm making. The basic level, now, if I'll quote Rabbi Malinowitz, I'm not saying this. If this doesn't sit well with you, he said a lot of things that didn't sit well with people. I'm just going to quote him. But I remember him yelling from the pulpit, you do a very, very chosh of a mitzvah, or something, I forgot what it was he said, and Hashem is just not a part of the picture. I remember him saying, valueless. So, and he repeated it again. So I'm allowing myself to qualify that to an extent and saying that apparently there's a certain level of reward, like we said, Vaita, to adhering to the conscience versus not adhering to the conscience. But again, we are coming back and saying that the great reward that we're talking about are the reward that are done in the context of our relationship with Hashem for Him. In a basic way, what's the most basic level of that? Mitzvah Tzriches Kavana, that I know I'm supposed to be doing this. So, now the more you add to that, it goes further and higher from there. But that's the basic level, and that already, just doing that earns you what Chazal say, that the reward for the smallest mitzvah in Olam Haba is greater than all the pleasure of Olam Hazeh put together. And that's for that very basic mitzvah done without that enhanced intent. But it goes from there higher and higher and higher. For example, the Tanya says that you may want, he very strongly urges you to think before doing a mitzvah. I'm going to kind of put it into my own phrase, like before rolling into a mitzvah because you're used to doing it, which, like we said, it's getting you that basic schar. He says, stop for a minute and say, I'm paraphrasing, 1 minute, maybe I won't do it. No, I have to. Why do I have to? Because Hashem wants me to. Oh, and that's why I'm doing it. He says, that's already, you're bringing yourself into the realm of avoda meira. You're already enhancing it with yira. It's very basic. It's without much feeling. Of course, you can go from there further and put more feeling into it. But you're already very significantly upgrading the mitzvah with that little added thought of stopping for a second and saying, 1 minute, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? Because if Hashem said I have to do something, I have to do it. There's no two ways about it. Wow, you've already upgraded it. And of course, it goes further and further and further. If you then take it, think about some benefit that you got in your life recently, something good that Hashem did for you, and you say, you know what? I want to channel that gratitude into this mitzvah. And so on and so forth. You can really go on and on about this from all the different angles. We won't do that right now. But whatever it is, this is our next answer to the question of why did Hashem not describe the schar of Olam Haba, delineate the schar of the mitzvahs? And the answer is that no two mitzvahs are equal. And therefore, there was no real way to come and quantify it.
Are no two affairs equal, or if it doesn't really, because they do spell it out, like the intent on doing it, does that make any difference? I'm DACA doing this against Hashem.
It does. It does. It definitely does. But still, there's the very basic level of just having transgressed, which is more, there's going to be less with mitzvahs. Averis, there certainly is the aspect of how much intent went into it, etc. But it's less, the variety, the range is less than with mitzvahs, where it's mamish infinite. Another reason, and this one, I don't know how far we'll get with this now, but we'll just introduce it. This is something very, very interesting. Is that also Umehen. I'm going to just say it outside now. Hashem doesn't delineate the schar for the mitzvahs in order to make a point, and that is, don't think that doing mitzvahs makes you deserving of schar. Why? So the way the Chovetz Chabad puts it is, anything you do still doesn't measure up to everything you owe Hashem. If you really think of, like Chazal say, that I'll call Neshima Neshima, and for every breath you take, you have to say Hallel. Now, if you think about it, Hallel takes a lot of breaths. So you understand that you are just accumulating an immense deficit as you go along, right? Well, what's the pshat? I'll call Neshima Neshima Chai Vloy Mar Hallel. Think about it. What does a breath involve? You know how many different organs and activity that breath involves? You take a breath, everything that's going on there, right? The intake, first of all, you take it in through your mouth or your nose. There's all kinds of dust and dirt coming in along with the breath. We don't want that to get all the way into your lungs. So what does Hashem do? Hashem puts a lot of sticky material between whether it goes through your nose or through your mouth before it gets to the lung. It traps so much of the dirt just so that by the time the air actually gets further in and hits your lungs, it's been purified. It's only the pure air that's getting there. Then it gets to the lungs. And you're giving a whole injection of oxygen that's then going to have to be spread all around the body. So the intake of the lungs want to get the maximum of that oxygen. You know how much surface level there is in the lungs? How much surface there is in the lungs in order to absorb that oxygen? The lungs have an area that absorbs the oxygen. It's the area of a tennis court. Now, in your lungs is a tennis court all rolled up. Tiny, tiny, like the what do you call it? The bronchi and the bronchioli, et cetera, et cetera. If you were to go and unroll that and open it all up, it would be the expense of a tennis court. And that is each breath you take, all the oxygen cells are being captured on that. And then they expel it out to the far corners of the body, gets carried through the red blood cells all over the place. And here I'm talking from a very layman's perspective. I don't really know this stuff. I read through it in a very basic, general kind of way, just in order to appreciate that, yes, the one breath of air is a whole big, complex, intricate system that if you really think about it, after every breath of air, you should really say to Hashem, wow, thank you for making that work. And that's just the breath of air. So the Chovetz Chabad says, anything that we do for Hashem just is not going to be able to keep up with what he's constantly showering on us all the time. Question.
Well, that's all he used to say. Always behind the eight ball.
Right.
Always behind what?
The eight ball. There's no way.
There you go. You can never catch up. You can never catch up. You're always behind. So this is what the Chovetz Chabad says. Hashem doesn't have to come and delineate the schar. Because it's sufficient if he comes and says, I'm going to do so much for you that besides you, what you're going to do is try to catch up a little bit with everything I did to you, and I'm going to reward you for all that. But I have to come and spell it out for you also. Like, there isn't really a negotiation going on here. You are deep in the, how do you say deep in the red? Is that how you say it? Deep in the red, whatever the case is. I'm telling you, I have a lot in store for you. But you can't come and tell me, well, tell me what? No, one minute. You're deep in debt. Please remember that. So I'm telling you that there is. I don't have to spell it out. This is a very important perspective to have. Because people often do feel like there's a certain give and take, and Hashem does owe me certain things. I think I said that. I remember somebody was talking about, we had some guests at our table. They were talking about considering moving to Eretz Yisrael. After Mechuyev to move to Eretz Yisrael, I'm not getting into that, but they were coming from the premise, assuming that really has to be discussed on an individual basis, but they were coming with the premise that, yeah. So the guest was saying how she said she was having this discussion with Hashem, and she was saying to Hashem, look, I want to do this for you, but there are certain things that are non-negotiable. I remember how I jumped at that word, like to tell Hashem about the non-negotiable things, like, whoa, your life is negotiable. What do you mean non-negotiable? Right? Your heart beating at this moment is negotiable. Your kidneys functioning are negotiable. What do you mean non-negotiable? But this is the point that we have to appreciate here. We are deep in debt. Hashem owes us nothing. Yet, Hashem says, I want to do it for you anyways. So lower your head and take it humbly and gratefully with a sense of inadequacy. Then you're in a proper dynamic with Hashem. I estimate we'll get there in about 8 years. But the Chavos HaVavos in Shara Kniya talks at such length about what a fundamental dynamic Kniya, that means submissiveness, is in a relationship with Hashem. The more you can recognize that you don't have a leg to stand on, the better a relationship you have with Hashem, the more of a healthy relationship you have with Hashem, the more Hashem cherishes the relationship with you, rather than, I don't know if I should use the word annoyance, right? When there's like a certain sense of, you know, when the kid, if a kid comes to you and says, listen, I made my bed twice in the last week. You know, you really owe me at this point. Every parent is like, listen, pal, right? So, or even better, I ate all my chicken last night, right? And that's basically what, this is a very, very important piece to realize. The more we can appreciate that our relationship with Hashem is just overwhelmed with the very fact that He wants to relate with us. And with that already, I feel overwhelmed with gratitude. Then, you know, you're in the right place and Hashem is actually, kiviyachol, interested in giving you that much more. That's why also, it's not the Rosh Hashanah season right now, but we know we're told to get to Rosh Hashanah also, that the most effective approach to davening on Rosh Hashanah, as the way Gemara says it, Shana Shel Rasha B'Tchilasa, which Rashi says means that you approach Hashem on Rosh Hashanah Ka'ani Ha'Omid B'Petach, like a poor person standing at the door asking for something. He doesn't feel that he has any sense of entitlement. Even everything that I already have, I'm asking for as an ani, not with a sense of, okay, Hashem, listen, I have parnas in place, don't worry about that, I'm fine. But, you know, there's a couple of things that I need, and I think I should be getting them because, look, I did do X, Y, Z over the last year. The more a person can come with a sense of, I don't have a leg to stand on, the only thing I can do is appeal to your compassion, Hashem says, oh, you're the person who I want to give things to. So this is the next reason, and it's actually half the reason. But this is the next reason that the Chavos HaVavos tells us, Hashem specifically did not delineate the schar of Olam Haba in order to get across that point. Hashem is saying, we want to talk about deserving, you don't deserve anything. Yet, I'm telling you that I have an awful lot that I want to give you. But I don't have to spell it out for you. Kiviyachol. Okay, we'll stop here.
So, Rav, next week we're on.
Next week we're on.
And then we're off until after Rosh Chodesh Elul. There's a Sunday after Rosh Chodesh Elul.